Blog Talk Radio.
Ever since I can remember, I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Are you telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
That's hot.
Hello there, children!
Hey, kids!
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now, the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Happy New Year! Monday, January 5th, and we are live on the Stupid Cancer Show, your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving voice to more than 1 million young adults affected by cancer. It's radio broadcast in the program of the I Am Too Young for This Cancer Foundation. We are a national survivor-led advocacy research and support foundation exclusively for survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer under 40? Socks, I will get busy living because it's the Stupid Cancer Show. And I'm your host, Matthew Zachary. Welcome to tonight's broadcast. We are here to change the world, one chemo infusion at a time, and share all the crapness that we know all too well. Now call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim, because I don't believe that change is possible if you never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here, you are still here, and this is why we fight. Forget the cure, my friends. That's right, you heard it first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. Tonight, Happy New Year, our Celebrity Palooza inaugural broadcast for 2009, and we'll be speaking with the venerable Chris Carr, crazy sexy camper. Fame, and everyone's favorite, Evan Handler, Californication, Sex in the City, author of Time on Fire, It's Only Temporary, great man, good friend of the show. So, Hello, my friends, and welcome to yet another fun-filled and exciting romp through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, and a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners. On our last show, back in 2008, I spoke with Carrie Wells in our Spotlight section, Barry Katz from Lots of Helping Hands, and Leslie Daly, registered nurse, and the author of a great book called Goddesses Don't Buy Green Bananas. Really cool book. I'll say that in Goddesses Don't Buy Green Bananas. So Happy New Year and welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show 2009. Alrighty, right here, right now, on our brand new home at Blog Talk Radio. I hope the transition was easy for everyone to move on over, and I'm fairly sure we'll have a few stragglers, but I, for one, think the new website, the chat room, the forum, this is a serious upgrade, folks. Super serious upgrade. And with this amazing transition, it opens up a whole new level of opportunity to take the show just to that next big step. You know, we have to pay tribute and homage to Now Media Corporation for 2 years of wonderful service and for helping us to get our feet wet as a social media talk show. And for all of our new listeners out there from the Blog Talk Radio community, a very special thank you for being here tonight with us. And welcome to the I'm Too Young for This Global Support Community for the next generation of cancer survivors. A world where remission is not a cure, survivorship is all the rage, and we're not taking any shit from anyone about the complacency of the status quo. This week, in fact, this Saturday coming up, January 10th, I celebrate my official 13th cancerversary after being diagnosed with pediatric brain cancer at the age of 21 while I was a senior in college just 6 months shy of graduation. I was a concert pianist at the time with dreams of becoming a world-class film composer. My cancer took away my motor coordination in my left hand, and that dream was smashed to bits. I was horribly isolated, surrounded by little kids, boomers, and seniors in the cancer center. No one looked like me. No one talked like me. And even though I had overwhelming support from my friends and family, I was alone. And this was not okay. What's worse, it's 13 years later, and this still happens to nearly 70,000 other young adults diagnosed with cancer in the prime of their lives. What's even worse than that is that for the past 30 years, we've made lots of progress in the purported war on cancer. Incidence and death rates have declined. More people are living longer. It sounds great, right? Well, there's a little Roger Maris asterisk to those wonderful sounding statistics, because in case you haven't heard, they don't apply if you're a young adult. And that's right. The 5-year survival rate for young adults has not improved in 30 years. I'll say that again for the cheap seats in the back. The 5-year survival rate for young adults has not improved in 30 years. Okay, let's see here. All those relays, race for the cures, 3 days, 5 days, bike rides, college cancer events, none of them benefit the outcomes of the young adult cancer population. So I founded the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation 2 years ago to change the rules, attract a new kind of activist, take on the bureaucratic cancerocracy, and raise awareness about the next generation of survivors, my generation, the orphan Gen Xers and Gen Yers who have only until recently never had a voice. Well, now they do, and change is actually happening. So welcome to our movement. We're here to stay. Our mission is simple: empower young adults affected by cancer and enable them to achieve their peak potentials, never letting their disease get in their way. If you are in your late teens, 20s, or 30s, this is your generation's cancer fight. If you're a boomer, we are your children, and we are dying at rates unthought of and unspoken of. If you are a senior or a senior citizen and part of the 94% of Americans who comprise all cancer survivors, things are only getting worse for your grandchildren. We are the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, stupidcancer.org. This is the Stupid Cancer Show. I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, a 13-year brain cancer survivor, and that's it. Are you in? The time is now, because it's time, it's our time, and it's about time. And that's the way I think it is. So this is what we're all about, folks, the quantity and the quality of your life, because there's more to the cure than just research. For better or for worse, change comes slowly and only from within. The need to cure cancer for Gen X and Gen Yers, whatever that means, is only coming from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, I say that if we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook and Second Life and kept Sanjaya on American Idol all those weeks, we should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, and this is our fight. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules, because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and survivorship is all that matters. Donna Martin graduates. All right, and kicking it up with our brand new platform, it is my absolute pleasure to, for the very first time in the history of the Stupid Cancer Show, to announce that we are going to have live co-hosts for the duration of the show. And to kick off the 2009 inaugural broadcast of the Stupid Cancer Show, it is my supreme pleasure to introduce to you tonight the a really close friend of mine. He came into my life a little less than a year ago, and his name is Jack Buffard. And he has his own special theme music. So here we go, Jack. You there, Jack?
I am. How are you?
Welcome to the show, my friend. Thank you for being my first ever guest.
Thanks for having me. We've come a long way this last year, haven't we?
We certainly have. And I'm going to finish your intro here by saying that you are no longer weighing in at 200 pounds from steroids and hailing from Danbury, Connecticut, the chief cancer anarchist for the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, Jack Buffard.
Hi, everyone. Hope everyone's enjoying the new platform. Definitely excited for 2009 as a part of the I'm Too Young for This organization. This is our year, 2008. We've definitely come a long way, and with a lot of help from a lot of great volunteers, we've accomplished a lot of good. And I'm so proud to be part of this organization. Matthew, I'm so proud to be working with you on a daily basis. And I'm so excited to see what the new year can bring to us. And I, too, am coming up on a cancerversary. Thursday is the one-year anniversary of my diagnosis. And I'm certainly glad that's behind me. And
that's for you, Jack.
I'm also proud to announce that about 5:30 this evening, I got a phone call regarding my latest 4-month CAT scan, and I was told that it came back clean, and they'll see me in another 4 months. So hopefully I can keep that going. And it looks like we have a caller. Hello, caller, are you there?
You are a mite.
All right, thank you very much, sir. Feel free to call back anytime.
Very nice.
So anyway, another 4 months to go. I cancer-free since June 6th or something, June 3rd, and I'll take it. And this is why we do what we do, because too many young adults get diagnosed, and they feel isolated. They don't know where to go. They think they're all alone. They think they're invisible, and they're not, because of organizations like I'm Too Young for Them.
Well, I got to tell you, Jack, it's been a real inspiration knowing you in just under a year, how much you've gone through, how much you've accomplished, and I think we have Tom Murdoch. Tom, are you on the line?
Hey, Matt. Hey, Jack. How are you?
Hey, Tom. Welcome to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Tom Murdoch. Tom gets his own applause. Tom is the chairman of the Young Adult Leadership Council's governing cabinet. What that means in layperson's terms is that we have this small, amazing army of leadership survivors around the country, and there's a sort of a governing body that organizes them and inspires them and keeps them active and growing throughout the year. This cabinet, of which Jack Buford is on the cabinet, Tom Murdoch is himself the chair of that cabinet, and I am forever indebted for his incredible advocacy and activism toward the organization. Tom will be popping in from time to time over the season to co-host the show with Jack and I. But why don't you let everyone know out there, Tom, your story, how you got involved, and what you're up to?
Yeah, sure. I am actually coming up on my 6 years of being cancer-free in a couple of weeks, and I'm 24 now. I was diagnosed when I was 18, about 3 weeks before graduation from high school, decided to, stay active and go off to college and try and take on my first semester of college while kind of coming back and forth to Boston, where I live in a suburb just outside of Boston, to come back home to do treatments every other week. And for me, that was really the only way to do it, to try and keep my mind off of what was going on and just stay active at school, try and keep up with my classwork. Anyway, everything seemed to work out okay. Going through the treatments and being at school, obviously a little bit difficult, but I think the motto of the I'm Too Young for This Foundation, as well as my own personal model during that time, was just to stay busy and to keep active as much as possible and to really try and live your life as best you can, regardless of what's going on. And I think a lot of people who are probably listening to this and a lot of people who follow our organization believe that as well. In terms of what we're up to right now, I kind of just wanted to give everybody out there a little bit of a recap on 2008 and maybe talk a little bit about what we have in store and what some of our goals are for 2009. Just to kind of, Matt, we talked about this briefly earlier, but just to give everybody out there an idea of what's happened over the past year, it's really been an amazing year for our organization and for really just more presence, not only here in America, but all over the world. And that's going to continue to be one of our goals for next year. Just to throw out some stats of what we did last year, many people who are listening will know, but some won't, and I want to welcome everybody who's tuning in from the Blog Talk Radio Network and psyched that that's our new platform, and I thank everybody who did take the time to tune in and check us out, and hopefully you'll be with us each week throughout the year. But for those of you who aren't too familiar with us, we have a really great program that our foundation runs called Stupid Cancer Happy Hours, where we try and, you know, different places all over the country, all over the world, we try and get people together who can relate with one another, and, you know, whether they want to talk about their treatment or whether they just want to hang out with people like them, we host events at various bars or restaurants or, you know, a bowling alley or a mini golf course or, you know, you name it, any type of venue out there to get everybody together. And last year, thanks to our unbelievable volunteers across the country from the Pacific Northwest with Matt Lowney down to Southern Florida with Amanda White and Jen Pates, to Southern California with Sarah Sharaf, and up into upstate New York with Leah Scherer, and just everybody that's in between that I'm leaving out, but certainly due their praise. We hosted 43, I believe was the final tally for 2008, 43 of those events across the country for people to just come and hang out with one another. In addition to that, what I think is one of our most important ventures for 09 is how many cancer centers that we have our presence in, meaning how many cancer centers across the country and around the world are supporting our organization and are letting their patients know that we're around. Last year, in 2008, we went from starting with 250 at the beginning of our second year in operation to what we ended the year with about 472, so nearly doubled that. And for 2009, we have a goal to more than double that again. We'd like to be in 1,000 cancer centers across the country and around the world. And tonight I'm asking everybody that's listening, if you live near somewhere that tends to young adult patients that might not know about us yet, we can easily get you some of our literature, and we can, you know, really ask you to bring that to the cancer center that maybe you are a patient at or maybe you know of in your neighborhood or your community. Because the more cancer centers we can be at, the more people we'll be able to help. And, you know, I can tell you just from some basic statistics that that has been a huge help to our movement this year. When we almost doubled our presence in different hospitals, we also saw some major growth in terms of how many people were coming to our website and asking for help, as well as how many people are on our Facebook page, which just in the last 2 weeks, or the last 2 or 3 weeks of 2008, the number of people who joined our cause page on Facebook jumped from 6,000 to 8,000, and maybe even 5,000 to 8,000 in a matter of weeks. So just the grassroots movement and the unbelievable support from our volunteers around the country is inspiring people to come and try and get some help from us or to come and volunteer with us and to help out those people that are in the same situation that you know, you and I and Jack were in just a few years ago. Because, you know, when we were going through this, there was no such thing as I2Y. There was no such thing as the stupid cancer movement. It just didn't exist. And now it does, and people are inspired to help those other patients that are now going through it, to let them know that, hey, you know, people out here to listen, there is some help. So just to kind of wrap up a little bit of our review of 08, 43 happy hours, and we want to push for 80 in 2009. So, again, we want to just about double how many we did in 08 for 2009. We also had three universities come on board with I2Y, thanks to our college committee, which kind of worked on through the cabinet to get some universities on board to really make them see that, you know, there are some other big box organizations out there that do some college with cancer and college type, you know, relays and all sorts of different fundraising techniques. But what this committee's been able to do with three different universities is let them know that, hey, these people, you know, I don't want to name names, but I'll leave that to Jack. But there are some bigger box organizations that really aren't helping the young adult movement. We haven't seen any increase in remission rates. We haven't really seen any increase in survivorship. And that's what our organization's all about. So if you're at a university somewhere around the country tonight and you're listening, what we'd like to make a presence in over 20 universities in 2009. And if you're interested in that, please feel free to email any of us, and you can get all our contact information at i2y.com. And then just to kind of wrap up a couple more things for 2009 that I want to share with everybody. We mentioned the 80 happy hours around the country, and again, thanks to our unbelievable volunteer groups, they've been able to make 43 of them happen in 2008, and I know that we'll be able to hit that number 80 in 2009. It's helped so many different, hundreds and hundreds of people have expressed their thanks for these, and really, you know, will email me. Yeah, at least once or twice a week I'll get an email saying, you know, thanks for this, thanks for what you guys are doing. It's really helping me get through what's a really crappy time in my life. And the next thing is as I mentioned, we want 1,000 cancer centers supporting our mission. We want 50,000 people on our Facebook cause page. It sounds like a big number to go from 8,000 to 50,000, but when I see a 2,000-person jump in a matter of a couple of weeks, I know the power of networking, and I know that everybody out there can invite their friends and family to join the cause page, and hopefully that will not only translate into some extra volunteers that might want to help us out, but hopefully that will also translate into people realizing that our organization, you know, we work very, very hard, and we do a lot of good things with a very limited budget, but at the end of the day, just like every other nonprofit, we do need a little help to survive, and we do need some help to make these programs a reality for so many cancer survivors and current survivors in treatment. So hopefully that Facebook cause page, getting up to 50,000 people, will you know, bring us in some monetary value and will help us continue to provide these programs throughout the year and for decades to come. And finally, I want to push our international brand. I want to push our slowly developing international presence. We're in the UK now. Our former chair, my predecessor, Ali Ansari, who's now studying in Cambridge, is helping us develop things in the UK. We've got some presence, thanks to Sherry Falls and some other great folks down in Australia. We've got some presence starting to develop in Mexico, in Japan, in Israel, and I know that in 2009 it's going to be one of our biggest years ever for our international development. I think that I've hit kind of our biggest goals, and I hope that everybody who's listening will kind of help us get there. I know it's going to take a lot, and again, I can't thank our volunteers enough for helping us out. But this is kind of the call to arms for 09. It's our first broadcast in 2009, and I know we can reach these goals. I look forward to working with everybody that's listening, as well as with you, Matt, and with you, Jack, and we're going to make this happen, and we are going to change the face of the young adult cancer movement in 2009. I can promise you that.
Damn straight, Tom Murdoch. Damn straight. Well, I understand. Jack, you still with me? All right. Apparently, Jack.
I'm here, Matt.
Oh, you are here. All right.
I'm here. I'm here.
All right. I understand that our first guest is with us, so without further ado, let me find a little cue music here.
What time is it?
9:23. My first guest is the notorious crazy sexy cancer chick that you know and have heard of. Award-winning actress, documentary filmmaker, blogger, podcaster, author of Crazy Sexy Cancer, Crazy Sexy Cancer Survivor. She is truly unique, a really remarkable and amazing person. Please welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, Chris Carr. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Carr.
I've hated you ever since I can remember.
Hi, Matt.
Hello, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hey.
I don't know if you know Jack, but Jack, say hi to Chris.
Hi, Chris. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi,
welcome
Jack.
Back.
Thank you.
So what have you been up to, my dear?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I my second book came out, and so I did a bunch of stuff for that. And I'm about to start the next one, believe it or not. I feel like my fingers are rubbed raw.
Wait, no rest for the weary? You just finished the second one, and you're already starting a third one.
Oh, the second one just came out. Yeah, it came out this fall. And so the next one I'm starting, and we've got a ton of stuff going on. It's a really exciting time. I'm a little tired. But all good stuff. So we're happy and ready for the new year.
I mean, it's funny. I'd like to say that there are people who, I'd be remiss to think that there are people who don't know who you are. But for our listenership, feel free to start from the beginning. How did you get involved in this ridiculous crapness?
I ask myself that every day. I was diagnosed with a rare sarcoma in 2003, And I was, I went to many different great hospitals in the country, and I was told there was no treatment. So I had an inoperable stage 4. That was it, just sort of watch and wait. And so I decided to go on my own, what I like to call adventure, and started researching all different kinds of alternative treatments and alternative ways of living and seeing how I could manage cancer. And that's sort of where it began for me personally, but then since I'm, an artist, I tried to find a way to make it work for me too, as far as using inspiration to get over fear and using creativity. And so I made a film called Creed 6 Cancer. It was on TLC and Discovery Health. And it was basically my 4 years of exploration. There's other amazing cancer chicks and babes in it. And then I wrote a couple books about it. The first one is a tips book, and everything from diet and lifestyle to navigating insurance to, second, third. Basically, you just shit hit the fan. Holy, now what do I do? Just here's this book. Take it, look at it. You'll laugh, and it's dirty. And then the second book is really about going a little bit deeper and overcoming some of the emotional garbage. And I tell people what to do, and then they get to write in the book.
You know, it's funny. One of my favorite things, and I met you a while ago, probably like in early 97 or even late 96 perhaps, and
mm-hmm.
I got to meet you in person several times, but then, of course, you were at the Live Strong Young Adult Alliance meeting in the fall of 2007. One of my favorite things you've ever said was, and I'm going to get this wrong, you'll correct me and then smack me later, is that when you are diagnosed with cancer, you have to become the CEO of, like, Save My Ass Incorporated or something like that?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Exactly.
Did I get it right?
Exactly. Save My Ass Technologies.
And
nobody else is going to, so I was like, I'll take the job.
Exactly. And just what exactly is Save My Ass Technologies?
Well, Save My Ass Technologies was what I like to call my my plan, and that was just getting really educated and smart and understanding all my options. And for me personally, the options were things that I had control over, what I eat, what I drink, what I think, how I move my body. A real basic grassroots sort of what can I do mission that I went on. And I learned a lot. I learned a ton of stuff, not just for cancer patients or people who are trying to change their life or are interested in prevention, but for everybody who, kind of connects the part and the whole and understands that not only are disease rates increasing at an alarming level, but so is global warming, and that there's an enormous connection between the two. And it, it took cancer to kind of wake me up and get with the program.
I mean, I see you as the embodiment of Race for the Cause. And, everyone's talking about Race for the Cure has been inculcated into our lifestyle and our culture. But you send an amazing signal out in a way that's just so digestible and makes so much sense. From the day I read it, and I give your books out, and I talk about you all the time.
Thank you.
We also share so many friends between I2Y Planet Cancer and the Crazy Sexy Cancer Life
network. The whole gang.
Yeah, I mean, but your thoughts on Race for the Cause, like where is the next 30 years of cancer really going?
My thoughts are different from most people's. My thoughts get me into trouble a lot of the time.
Are you leaving to go to Mars or something?
Well, I'm really big on prevention, so I don't get too involved, unfortunately, for some people, raising money for organizations that do a lot of pharmaceutical-based research. I think that there's a lot missing in the movement, and I think that until we start to focus on why people are really getting sick and not just at the minutia cellular level, at the, at the dinner table level. Just is cancer always genetic, or perhaps is what's genetic like the donuts and the macaroni that's running on your kitchen table? So I feel like sometimes we miss the mark in a lot of ways. And yet I am a big fan of Western medicine, and I find so much value in it, absolutely. But I don't think we're going to get to all these glorious places that people, cheerlead and start to get everybody excited about unless we really take a big look at why people are getting sick. And I think that that look that people take is oftentimes a little too under the microscope.
Well, yeah, and that could, you could almost, I'll make a word up, but you could almost Al Goreize this to the extent of your head exploding inside your brain, where we can discuss, air pollution or toxicity, but how do you really get down to the nitty-gritty of changing agribusiness and global economy and free markets? And, you know, there's just so many, you know, confounding, calamity-driven, mm-hmm. you know, thought scenarios that are out there on what can really make our world something where it is sustainable from an eco-friendly, a health-friendly, that perspective.
What can we really do? Well, each one of us has to make one step. You know, if we don't do something, then we're going to continue to see the pickle that we're in.
Right.
We can only start with where we are. And I think that as a nation, the more people wake up, the more people start to get on board with the movement, the more people start to take better care of themselves, and we start to see changes. Obviously cleaning up the environment and working on all the things that you just discussed, agribusiness, and all how that's connected to the pharmaceuticals and all this kind of stuff, those are very big things. The only thing that I can focus on personally is teaching myself and my community how to take better care of themselves. And they see enormous difference in their health. They see difference in their scans. We've helped people with rheumatoid arthritis. We've helped people with diabetes, with heart disease, with high blood pressure, with cholesterol. And those are small changes that we can all make. I try not to get weighed down by the enormity of just how polluted life is. And I know that there are simple solutions that people can take, because I don't want to see more people diagnosed with cancer. And I don't want to see more of my friends diagnosed with cancer. And I'm not going to stop writing or talking or, you know, doing half the things that I do until we start to connect the dots a little better.
I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself, and you're absolutely right. It comes down to the cliche of everybody can do one little thing and it all really adds up. It makes complete sense. Well, one of the things I really like about your books, and for those of you out there, just it's Crazy Sexy Cancer. She's got two books out, Crazy Sexy Cancer and Crazy Sexy Cancer Survivor. And they're on Amazon, and they're all over the web. And one of the books themselves, just visually, the books themselves, I don't know who you use to do your layouts or your design work, but they're not like, they don't read like books. You know, they don't feel like books. It's more like an experience going through each one of them because they're so well-designed and they engage the readers so well. Were you responsible for that? I can only imagine.
You're so sweet. Thank you. I have a big say in it. I do all the photography and whatnot, but the designer that I work with, she adds the jazz. You know, we try and make things fun for people, because obviously talking about cancer can be really depressing and down, and there aren't a lot of resources out there for people who, are looking for something a little lighter, and even though we're talking about serious topics, right? I like to try and make it a little groovier, so thank you for noticing that.
So, I mean, what's this new book about? I mean, unfortunately, there's no short supply of fodder to write about in these days, especially in the milieu that you're working with, but what are you working on?
I'm working on a diet and lifestyle book. I'm working on a book that kind of makes prevention hot. So I've been doing a lot of work with cancer and how we can, you know, boost our immune systems. Obviously, no, not everybody is going to, prevent cancer by adopting a better lifestyle. I mean, sometimes things are absolutely genetic and things are out of our control, but I think a lot more. So we have opportunities that oftentimes are just not taught. And so in keeping with that, I think that this next book is tentatively titled Crazy Sexy You. And thanks. I don't know. I'm still on the fence, but thank you. And it's for a bigger audience, and I hope people will be able to read it and say, maybe I can cut back on this and add this and prevent some of these diseases before I have to deal with them, because they sure are bare and stupid once they come along.
Yeah, that's a good point, Chris.
Jack, what was that?
I was just going to say, Chris, I think that's great that you're going to bring attention to a lot of prevention measures and such, because so much of today's society revolves around cures, you know,
yeah.
Walking for cures, you know, drinking for cures, biking for cures. You know, there's so much going on for the cure, but what about the cause? You know, mm-hmm. Like, that's great, we want to cure cancer, but how about finding the reasons why young adult cancer incidences keep going up every year. Like, what's causing that?
Right.
And, you know, why haven't our rates improved in 30 years? What's causing that? And so many people are focused on funding for the cure. What about funding for the cause? And I think it's just great that you're going to bring attention to prevention measures and, you know, and that topic, because it's important and it's not something people think about.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you for saying that. I mean, it is about changing the party, you know, because I know for me, when I was diagnosed at 31 years old, and again, you know, I didn't have the option of treatment, so that was out of the question. That's why I became so passionate about this, about, you know, changing your lifestyle and prevention. I thought prevention was like about fiber and stuff that I would deal with much later when I retired, and I was like wicked boring. You know, it just was something that old people dealt with. It wasn't something that somebody who was cool and interesting at the beginning of their lives had to deal with. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. So, again, changing the party is kind of why I call things crazy sexy. And that's what I'm up to now.
And if you ever need a crazy sexy cover boy, Matthew and I are both available.
Oh, fantastic. I pick the outfits, though.
Actually, Chris, we want you to stay on a little bit because Evan asked me to let you know that he wanted to say hi.
Cool,
so,
yeah.
Let me see if I could figure out these cues again and not screw this up, and let's see if I can get this one. All right, let's try this now.
What time is it?
9:36. My second guest tonight on our inaugural broadcast of 2008 is an incredibly articulate, passionate actor. Author, poet. You know him from Sex and the City, from Californication. He is an extremely long-term survivor of young adult cancer. He has chronic myeloma. I believe he has CML. He'll correct me if I'm wrong. Evan Handler is a great friend of the show, and it's my pleasure to welcome him here. Ladies and gentlemen, Evan Handler.
Hey, Evan.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Evan, how you doing?
It's
Hi,
like
Evan.
A crazy, sexy cancer party.
You have joined the crazy, sexy cancer party, indeed.
How's everybody doing?
Doing real good. Happy New Year to everyone, by the way.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You know, I respond so much to a lot of what Chris was saying about looking for ways to prevent as opposed to cure, because my personal non-scientific full of hot air belief is that a lot of cancers are preventable. I mean, by the same token, though, you know, I'm so far from being a young adult now. I'm really on the verge of becoming an old man. And Chris was saying how she's very careful what she eats, what she drinks, and how she moves her body. And I realized I eat whatever I want, I drink whatever I want, and I don't move my body at all. So I feel like I've become the poster boy for you can do whatever you want and still survive a long time after cancer. Even though I don't believe that philosophically, I think it's important that someone say it.
I like that you say that. You always say these things to me, and I would never change it.
Well, I guess, I mean, the theme here is, you know, we talk about young adults because, yes, you were in the 80s, you know, like we are now, and you were probably, I can't imagine reading your books, you were that much more isolated and angry and not treated appropriately and it, just a very hostile and negative environment for you. I look up to someone like you because I mean I was diagnosed 13 years ago, and to me that was the dark ages. So, you know, 1980 something is like the Paleolithic era of cancer treatment, but to sort of superimpose being 21, you know, 10 years before I was diagnosed is that much worse. I look up to someone like you. You know,
well, thank you. Yes, I was screaming in a vacuum. There's no doubt about it. And the books that I've written are for people to see, you know, somebody who went through it, you know, longer ago than might have been imaginable. And written partly because I looked for somebody who had recovered from what I had and they weren't around, you know. So I've tried to at least hold myself up as an example of what's possible as best I can.
Well, yeah, I mean, which goes back to this whole notion of, you know, honestly, I have the Matthew Zachary loophole clause that I invented in our bylaws, which basically says that if you had cancer under 40, no matter how old you are, you're still a young adult survivor, and you're still in the club. Because it's really about measuring the impact of quality of life and survivor rates in that age group. So to see that you're still here, even though you went through Chernobyl, like I did, you know, and that you were treated like crap, like I did, where finally, you know, would you have even thought 20 years ago, or for me 13 years ago, there'd be a radio show about young adult cancer? No. I mean, you're sort of like the start of the barometer, in a sense, on how much progress we have made. And, you know, it's that, I think, that has given me such a just an incredible, you know, a lionization of your story and what you've been through and how you've been able to just channel that in a way that's really finally now maturing in our culture. People resonate with you so strongly because of Live Strong and because of Stupid Cancer and because of Planet Cancer.
Yes, Matthew, I was ahead of my time, and now the world is finally catching up to me.
Isn't that always the case?
Excuse me, isn't that always the case? You know, I look, the issues you're talking about are all valid and vivid, and what's fascinating to me, you know, because I've lived my own life as opposed to just tuning into listening to me tonight, is how long ago those experiences are for me. And that doesn't mean that I don't still suffer from a lot of the same anxieties as a lot of people with similar histories. But I am able to view it from a perspective of great, great distance, which is something that I could never imagine before. So it's really an incredible privilege to be able to experience it as being so long ago. I'm about to turn 48, which means that I'm about to enter into the first period of my life where it'll have been, I'll have lived more of my life after the diagnosis than before.
But isn't there a sense of, well, like, let me put it to you this way. Would you rather be in this place now seeing that nothing changed from 20 years ago, or how does seeing how far we've come legitimately with respect to patient advocacy and survivorship and the fact that we can have a conversation challenging the word cure? Everyone was so dreamy about it for so long, and now we're really questioning its value in the long term about, you know, how it can really help society. I think,
well, you and I come down on different sides of the fence about the word cure, because, you know, as you said, coming from, let's say, the relative dark ages back when I was sick, and in the books that I've written since, you know, when I publish stuff, when I refer to myself as being cured, even though that is what I am. I mean, you know, I'm not expected to get acute myeloid leukemia again. I understand I'm at greater risk from some things as a result of the treatment that I was given. But I'm not expected to get that again. Statistically, the recurrences after this length of time are really unheard of. And when I say that or speak that or write it, people want to fact check my cured status. I always feel like I could write an article saying I beat Lance Armstrong in a bicycle race, and it would draw less of a red flag than using the term cured. So I've been on a mission to get people to accept and stop questioning my cured status over the years. And cut down on the stigma against the usage of that word, even though I understand your reasons for saying the opposite.
Well, I'm not here to just, and Chris, feel free to chime in, and Jack, feel free to chime in, but my perspective is that I'm not disenfranchising the word in the sense of like its meaning and power, not trying to take away hope from people. I do it with love in the sense that, you know, it's really all about the lifestyle now of surviving cancer. Before, back when I was treated and back when you were treated, it was like, let's just get him cured and send him on his way. There really wasn't anything post-hospital. There was no lifestyle. There was no cradling or nurturing or inspiring, hand-holding empowerment to help you achieve your peak potential once you're out of the hospital. When the doctor said you're cured, go home, that was the end of the story. And it was like, go pat yourself on the back or the tush and have a nice life. I try to skew that in a way where cure is more of a lifestyle, where I hearken cure right now for me to be disease-free. I don't have brain cancer anymore. I probably won't get it again, but I am, like you, at a much higher predisposition to a secondary cancer from all the Chernobyl crap that I went through. But for me, remission, at least in this day, in the 21st century, remission is nice to be in. Being disease-free is great. But cure really comes down to maybe it's just an abstract concept of, what is the value of your life, like with diabetes or HIV. When you're a diabetic, you live with diabetes. Are you cured? No, but there is no cure. It's a chronic condition, but you live with diabetes. There are plenty of people living with cancer now, which, if that's the cure, I'll take it. There's a lot of different vagaries in there.
All these words are dangerous in so many ways, because whether it's cure or remission or, for me, stability, you know, people will literally get freaked out if I don't say the word cure, because they look at me and I'm so healthy and I've got so many things going on, and they're just like, wait a minute, what word are you using? You're not using the cure word. And I think that oftentimes patients also get involved in, like, the staging game, too. Like, stage one is not as important as stage four. Stage four people, they, you know, flex their muscles a little bit more. What kind of treatment have you been through? Oh, I've been through so much worse. And then we just get caught in this cyclone of the cancer world, which is just so, it's such a better place to step out of, if you guys know what I mean.
No, I agree. Evan?
You know, I just, we each, I absolutely, you know, I don't know how to say it exactly, but I agree with what you're saying, Matthew, but it's just, how do I say it? Everybody's personal history lends them their own agenda.
Agreed.
So the only point I meant to make is that you know, for so long I had people, you know, trying to impress upon me that cure wasn't possible, and the fact that I did manage to get cured and that this is now considered to be a curable illness became an important message for me to put across. You know, you having your own history, or Chris having her own history, you have your own valid agendas for which a cure or hope for a cure might have distorted the things that you would like attention to have been paid to. Such as really long-term side issues, and or the many, many, many people who are living with chronic illnesses, whether cancer or others. So they're all valid viewpoints. The only thing I meant to say was make the sort of distinction that because of my particular history, my agenda historically has been a different one. That's all.
Yeah, and I love the fact that we can even have this conversation. Whoever thought we'd be able to just deconstruct the word cure when all we've been doing is hoping for it for the last 20 years? I just think that.
I mean, a lot of people, you know, I meet a lot of people who want to talk about how they've been discriminated since their cancer diagnosis, and I don't think I have been. I mean, I've been discriminated against because I'm unfriendly. And I really think that's not fair. You know, I think that people should treat me just the way they would treat a friendly person.
I thought you were cured from that.
Yeah, Evan's living with a chronic condition of unfriendliness.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a side
effect. Well, anyway,
one thing.
Go ahead. Sorry.
All right. I just want to say, like, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the individual also, because, you know, I came back with my first clean scan back in June, and medically speaking, I won't be cured or considered cancer-free, I believe, until I have 5 years of clean scans. So, you know, every 4 months I'm going for a scan that fortunately have been coming back clean, but I believe that medically speaking I'm in remission, but I can't say I'm cured until that 5 year period, or I can't say I'm cancer free to that 5 year period. Now, that being said, I was always, you know, trying to focus on the positive. And, you know, knowing, I would say to myself, well, you're going to beat it. It's just going to be, you know, a tough 6 months or a tough year or whatever, which it was. But I wasn't going to let it overtake me, which is how a lot of us treat it mentally. So I think that these words like cured and, you know, cancer free and, you know, sick depend on the individual, because some people can say, oh, I'm not sick. I'm just going through something. Whereas other people with the same thing would be like, oh, my God, I'm so sick. I don't know how I'm going to get through it.
Hey,
I think
look,
it sounds
think
like we're
should,
all in agreement on this one.
People,
yeah.
People should latch on to, you know, whatever lifelines and whatever, you know, pieces of floating material they can grab onto, you know, in trying to survive a stormy sea, by all means. And I think it's really interesting, all of us talking about the different passionate views of different terminology. I mean, I think I've spoken to you, Matthew, about the fact that I don't like to be called personally, and I don't refer to myself as a 23-year survivor of,
right.
You know, and the semantics of it becomes so particular and important to me. And the only reason I say that is because, you know, I like to just talk about myself as a guy who had leukemia 20-some-odd years ago, because one sounds to me like somebody, you know, clinging with his fingertips, hoping to get another 2, 3, 4 days out of it. You know, and I like to put across the message to people that one can transcend and move beyond. And to call myself, 23-year survivor and counting makes it seem like I'm just waiting for that blade to drop. And even if in my own life and in my own frightened moments I might feel like that person, I still want to send the message out that, you know, this is in the past and now I'm in the present. And so I'm a guy who had this condition so many years ago.
No, I completely agree with you. I don't know if either of you have ever been to a, or anyone listening ever been to a Cohen rally, but every now and then there's like these 80-year-old women who had cancer in their teens, and they'll announce themselves as like 71-year breast cancer survivors. And you got to kind of wonder, like, where does the label end at what point? I mean, I'm wearing it on my sleeve because I kind of have to, and that's what I do. But you raise a very excellent point. And clearly, I'm fairly confident that the large percentage of people who hit 5 years, they just want to, like, walk away. They don't want to. They're not going to pretend it never happened again. At least maybe it's harder to do that these days. But
well, the point I'm trying to make is that each one of us, the viewpoints are all valid and all important, and it just depends on where, you know, which important philosophy you feel like you want to promote as you move on and have a platform to sort of help others through, you know, and they're each valid for different groups at different stages is what it sounds like to me.
Absolutely, absolutely. But anyway, on to just some quick business here. Evan, I know you've been, like, running around the country driving yourself crazy with promoting this new book, but you got a couple of appearances coming up in Santa Rosa in 2 weeks, and then you're coming back to New York to Colgate, then back to California.
I think they've all been canceled, Matt.
Oh, they have.
I got tired of traveling, and I canceled. I'm going to Marin in March, I think.
Okay.
But I did 18 cities in 22 days and decided that was enough for the near term.
Well, congratulations then on completing a fairly robust schedule of touring then.
Because I'm old, yeah, you see. This is what all the younger survivors have to look forward to, is becoming old and tired.
Yeah, Evan, when I saw you in Boston, you looked pretty frazzled, and you were on, I think, day 21 of your 22-day leg. I think you should get I think you should get the title survivor just based on that itinerary alone.
You know, it was also, I did a tour sponsored by the Jewish Book Council, so I went to Jewish community centers around the country, and nothing against Jewish people, because I hail from Jewish people, but it was an overdose of hospitality, let's say.
That's politically well said. Well, and Chris, your book is Crazy Sexy Cancer Survivor, the new one.
Mm-hmm.
Out on bookstores, and you're working on a potentially third book called Crazy Sexy You?
That's right.
Working title.
Working title, unless you want
to
change
it. And I would just like to say for everyone listening that Chris Carr is the most attractive woman I never had an affair with.
I love you, Evan. How many years have we known each other?
Many,
sounds
but
like
we were at a,
job.
A lot of them.
Chris, maybe you can make a guest spot on Californication.
If I could be with Evan, I would do anything.
Oh, there you go.
I'm writing it down right now. Chris Carr. I'm going to hand it in when we go back to work.
Oh, God.
And Evan, I just want to say, Evan, I just want to say to you and the listeners out there, you know, as a young adult survivor, you know, I personally look up to you, you know, having read your books and, you know, gotten to know you, you know, here and there a little bit. You know, you definitely had the odds against you, you know, where you were, you know, your family was basically told, you know, make the arrangements because he's not going to make it. And you overcame those horrible statistics. And the last chapter in your It's Only Temporary book, you reflect on the fact that the odds were stacked against your fertility, which is a huge issue that many of us in the young adult cancer community face. And somehow you beat those odds too. And I congratulate you for that. And, you know, for anybody who's listening who thinks that the odds are stacked against them and they're not going to overcome, you know, there are examples like Evan out there who have overcome and overcome several obstacles. So basically, don't let anything get you down. Just keep doing what you can. Life happens and, you know, stuff happens for a reason and bad stuff happens for a reason. And, you just keep doing what you can and get through it, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but don't give up.
Well, okay. You know, I mean, look, that's a big part of why I wrote the books. The new one, someone was just asking online, it's called It's Only Temporary, The Good News and the Bad News of Being Alive. And it does culminate in the birth of my now 2-year-old daughter. She'll be 2 next week. So I have become an incredible example of anything's possible. And even things that are supposedly impossible or million to one odds can happen again and again and again. And it's very ironic because I don't tend to be in my everyday life the most optimistic guy. I mean, everybody talks about the glass being half full or half empty, and I look at a glass and usually it just looks dirty to me. But there I am, and that tends to be my default position. And yet, you know, I still manage to find, you know, the tools to bring and the resources and manage to, you know, overcome supposedly insurmountable odds and conceptions that were supposedly impossible. So I do try hard to let those things be known so people can see, who find themselves in supposedly very difficult situations, that there might be more paths to success than are easily apparent.
Well, I mean, talking about meeting odds, look no further than what Lance just did, right?
True.
Yeah. What Lance has done many times in various ways.
With many attractive women.
Oh, dear.
Well, yeah, we won't go there. We got about 4 minutes left of the show, but I wanted to know if you guys had any sort of anything coming up. Evan is obviously taking a vacation from his vacation and entering the terrible twos starting next week, apparently. So good luck with that.
We're moving our household for the 5th time in 6 years is what we're doing.
Oh, boy. Is that to accommodate the terrible twos?
Actually, we're moving to a smaller place. It's to get back to Santa Monica, where we'd like to live more.
Oh, well, good luck with the move.
Thank you. We want cleaner air and fresher food, and we want to start living Chris Carr's lifestyle.
Evan, does the new house have a bidet?
No bidets yet. We have not come into the bidets yet.
That'll be the first thing you buy.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a housewarming gift from Matt.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and Chris, what are you up to besides the book? You are touring, you're speaking, what are you up to?
I've got a bunch of speaking gigs coming up in March, and we're working on our own TV show right now. So we just signed a development deal, and we're trying to bring this lifestyle, crazy sexy lifestyle, to cable television. So I'll keep you posted on that, but it should be fun.
Very, very cool. Well, I mean, I really, really want to thank both of you for being my guests on our inaugural 2009 show. It's been amazing. This is the new platform. We've introduced the show to a new audience of 2.6 million users that would not know we existed otherwise. So you have really helped make a difference in kicking off what I hope is a phenomenal 2009 for everybody.
Thank you,
Matt.
Thank
you both.
So,
it's great to talk
you.
To you, Chris.
You too, honey. You're so amazing. I think you're the most inspiring person ever.
Oh,
hey.
Thank you. I hope we meet again.
Next to Matt. Next to Matt.
Well, I'm glad we got the two of you on the show together. I hope you guys get to see each other, and I look forward to seeing you guys when next our paths cross.
You
okay.
too. All right.
Thank you both for being on the show. Chris Carr and Evan Handler,
thank you,
everybody.
Thank you, Chris.
And now it's time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks. That's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as I did talking to sick and stupid cancer.
Love. Go to bed, Leah.
Go to bed, Leah.
Exciting and new.
Next week, Cervical Cancer Spectacular with Jennifer Pace, another member of our Young Adult Leadership Cabinet, and Michelle Whitlock of the group Tamika and Friends, director of the National Cervical Cancer Coalition, and the author of the book Reframing a Tragedy, Overcoming Loss and Finding Love in the Face of Cancer. Cervical Cancer, next week, the Stupid Cancer Show, is sure to be a hell of a show. Don't miss it. We'll have our podcast of this show up and running soon. Our 2007 and 2008 podcasts are available at itunes.ity.com. So we will see you all back here next week, my friends, live from the chemo deck. Captain Stubing and I wish everyone a pleasant evening. Have a great week. Good night, folks, and Happy New Year.
Love won't hurt anymore.